Schon wieder Bewerberflaute? Sie schalten Anzeige um Anzeige. Das nervt und ist doch viel zu teuer. Stopp! Raus aus der Recruiting-Spirale. Mit StepStone All Jobs bekommen Sie alle Anzeigen für ein Jahr in einem Paket zu einem fixen Preis. So sparen Sie bis zu 75% Kosten pro Bewerbung und sind jederzeit flexibel. Jetzt Termin vereinbaren auf stepstone.de/alljobs. StepStone. Einfach die richtigen Talente finden für alle Jobs.
Stu does America.
Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Now, tariff-free. Mm-hmm. Be sure to hit the bell for notifications. Also, get your Stu Does America merch, StuDoesMerch.com, the code STU10. Get 10% off your entire order. Sort of a reverse tariff if you use STU10. Glenn Beck is going to be here with some commentary on free trade. He's got a big show on that tonight. I've also got an update on the war between Donald Trump and Harvard, which I think you'll like. But we're going to start by doing Tax Liberation Day. Yes, we had a Liberation Day on tariffs. That was at least the way that it was kind of sold. Now we're talking about Tax Liberation Day. And it's funny because yesterday was tax day. Hopefully you got your return filed on time. I know I got my extension filed on time, which is the only thing I ever do in April. I can't remember the last time. I don't know if I ever have filed my taxes in April. It's always October. I love it, and I'm sure you do as well. It's nice because that way it's not like one day. It destroys your entire year. And that makes it so much better. By the way, Tax Liberation Day, they call it Tax Freedom Day usually, usually comes right around this time. It's usually like April 18th, April 20th, in that range. We won't know for sure until a little bit later on. But that day is the day where your work starts for you. The concept being you work your entire year up until mid-April just to pay for taxes. After that, you start working for money that you actually earn. Now, it doesn't come to you that way, but that's the concept. And we're almost there. We're almost to Tax Freedom Day. So hopefully Tax Liberation Day affects you in a positive way. And I know, I don't know about you, Glenn said this so many times, but nobody feels charitable on April 15th. No one's like, you know, gosh, I'm really glad I helped everyone. Because we all know what happens, right? This money goes into the government and it's lost. It's destroyed. It is wasted in so many ways, oftentimes to corruption and all sorts of nonsense. So nobody feels good about this. And we are now looking for a situation where we have a Republican House and Republican Senate and a Republican president trying to put together some sort of reconciliation bill that will lead us to a better tax situation, a better financial future, a better economy for us all. Now, there are some refund dollars coming to you. Here's the map, by the way, of who gets the most. Texas, Florida, Nevada's on there. There's a bunch of them that get, if you're getting over $3,600 back on average, I should remind you, this is a concept that is difficult for many people to understand, probably not this audience. But like when you listen to the advertising of like H&R Block or something, they'll be like, hey, it's refund day. Everyone's getting their refunds. A tax refund is bad. It's bad. If you have a tax refund, what it means is the government took more money from you over the course of a year than they were supposed to. And now, after you haven't had it for 9 months, a year, 6 months, whenever those payments were made, you now are getting it back, supposedly, but it was supposed to be yours the whole time. It wasn't earning interest for you. It wasn't invested in your business. It wasn't invested in your 401k. It wasn't invested in your investment portfolio. It wasn't spent on something important that you wanted to spend it on. No, no, it lived with the government. It went on vacation for a year, and now you're finally getting it back. That's a tax refund. It's not good. They shouldn't be taking more than they're supposed to in the first place. Totally separate story. By the way, one interesting IRS development from today. Trump is going to name Hunter Biden whistleblower as the acting IRS commissioner. You remember him. Gary Shapley was his name. He was one of the investigators who alleged the Justice Department slow walked the investigation of Hunter Biden. He came out kind of bravely, told that story, was telling the truth. And now he's maybe rewarded with the IRS commissioner. I hope that's true. Maybe it will prevent me from getting audited, maybe because he'll be sensible. I don't know. I will say I made it through the entire Biden administration and the entire Obama administration without getting audited. And then I got audited during the Trump administration. To be fair, it does seem like it was my mistake. So that's a whole different thing. I may have screwed something up, but that's, you know, I'm just going to point that out. And hopefully you'll forget that last sentence. Republicans are now weighing raising taxes on the highest earners. I told you this reconciliation bill is coming. And to give you the quickest least painful explanation of what reconciliation is. Normally, you need 60 votes to get a bill through the Senate. Of course, Republicans can't pass anything that they want to on their agenda to get 60 votes. There is a rule that exists that allows you to pass basically one bill a year through a process called reconciliation with only 50 votes, and Republicans can hit that standard. So they have to make this big, beautiful bill that you've heard about because they can get it through with 50 votes. One of the requirements of that particular process is to say it has to lower the deficit. It has to lower the debt that we have. It has to be moved toward a more balanced budget. That was kind of the cutout. They said, hey, if you're balancing the budget, you only need 50 votes. So, of course, what's happened over the years is basically all of these, both sides of the aisle, have used this to pass pretty much whatever they want, but they have to come up with some justification that it's making the budget gap a little bit smaller. So that important part of that process is the congressional scoring. They bring the bill to a congressional budget office. They come back with a number that says, hey, this is going to increase the deficit or it's going to decrease the deficit. In a case of reconciliation, to remind you, it has to decrease that deficit. So this is one of the justifications being used for this particular potential tax hike. You might be saying, wait, Republicans are supposed to cut taxes. Right. There is a contingency within the White House, and it's not tiny, that wants to raise taxes on the wealthy. Now, I don't think Donald Trump is part of that contingency. I think, you know, there are others there. You know, if you think of kind of the Steve Bannon wing of this movement, I think that's where this is coming from. Here's the report on it. Among the many pay for proposals that the White House officials are currently considering is the possibility of raising the tax rate on the wealthiest Americans. One proposal is to raise rates on incomes greater than $626,350 from 37% back to the Barack Obama era of 39.6%. Another option is to create a new bracket for those earning $1 million or more. President Donald Trump has yet to endorse either idea publicly, but he reportedly entertained raising taxes on some of the highest earners during a meeting with Republican senators early this month. Now, we fight for a lot of stuff as conservatives. A lot of stuff. A lot of people say, you know, people seem to fight really hard to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico, for example. Like, that was a really big passion issue for the right. I got to say, I don't really care what it's called. You call it whatever you want. That being said, we can't stand up for tax cuts now. I mean, really? Is that really where we are as a party? We have to sit here and hide and cower from the left and raise taxes on people who have achieved a lot and have maybe built a small business or whatever. I mean, look, you might not make $626,000. You know, you might hope to someday, though. And the bottom line is it morally correct to go after and take people's money that they earned? I don't think it is. Is it morally correct to take money from business owners that are employing people? I don't think it is. In fact, conservatives have kind of agreed on that for a pretty long time. So I think you should be cutting taxes for everybody, not raising them on people. We will see if that actually exists. I'm, as I said, pretty skeptical that Donald Trump is among the crew calling for that. A lot of this goes back to, well, he wants to spend money on other things, might want to increase the defense budget, or he might want to, you know, what they say, spend on things that he promises he made during the campaign, like no taxes on tips and the like. Frankly, he should be able to do all these things. And I want to kind of walk by how we can do some of these things, because there's an issue with Donald Trump on spending. And we've talked about this for a very long time, going back to his first run, where he is very, very clear. He was one of the only people on stage who said, look, we're not cutting Medicare. We're not cutting Social Security. Now, I, as a person who, you know, has a lot of concern about the budget and the way that looks, I do think those things need to be reformed. In fact, I don't like those programs at all. I would think that we could do a much better job. Even the minor proposals, and maybe we'll do something on this coming up, on, for example, privatization of Social Security, that proposal that was floated by President Bush back in the mid-2000s, which, by the way, would have made your life, if you were retiring right now, much, much better. We now know, right? There's a lot of projections back in the mid-2000s. Gosh, this is going to kill us. What about 2008? That came. What about 2020? That was terrible. We now know that basically every single year, including 2008, because it wouldn't have been effect for people that were retiring in 2008, every single year of people that were retired would have been better off under that proposal if it was passed. We now know that. And we can go through the numbers if you like at some point. The bottom line, though, with all this is Trump's not going after any of those big programs. And that is the overwhelming cause of our debt. So it's hard to lower the deficit if you don't go after those programs in some way to reform them even. I don't like them at all, frankly. I think they're terrible programs. And these universal programs should be things that conservatives oppose as much as possible. That being said, the reason why he doesn't go after those programs is because he wanted to win elections, right? He wants to say, hey, I'm not going to cut your Medicare or Medicaid. Even when he says that, they still come after and accuse him of it. Why? Because it's very politically powerful, right? You can, if you convince older voters who show up to the polls that someone's going to take your Medicare or Medicaid or a Social Security away from it, Medicaid's actually for lesser income Americans, but you convince those people that their money's going away, they're not going to vote for you. So the Democrats accused Donald Trump of doing this, despite the fact that he has been universally opposed to it against his own party's kind of traditions. So he's not going to touch those programs because it's the third rail of politics. However, the nonsense that Joe Biden passed in his term should not be off limits. Those programs have not been programs that people have had to depend on for 30, 40, 50 years and feel like they've paid into, even though in reality they haven't. It's just another government program that, you know, the money disappears immediately to pay for the current retirees. So it's not something you're actually paying in for. That is a FDR scam going back many, many years with the payroll tax. So all that being said, why don't we go after the stuff that Joe Biden spent? You might say, well, he was already out of office, Stu. He already spent the money. A lot of this money has not been spent yet. A lot of it. And we can go back and claw back a lot of those terrible Biden proposals. We can save that spending. We can improve the scoring on the reconciliation bill and maybe cut taxes for everybody rather than just a couple of smaller groups. Let me walk you through some of this spending because I think it is really important. This is from Epic, the Biden-Harris spending binge. Let me go through some of the stuff that they did here. Biden-Harris administration increased the federal deficit by about $2.5 trillion more than what the Congressional Budget Office projected for fiscal years 2021 through 2024. Spending surged by about $4.7 trillion, tax revenues by about $2.2 trillion. The national debt rose to $35.5 trillion. The administration's policies led to the highest rates of inflation in four decades, reducing the average worker's purchasing power by about $2,230. Good job, Joe. President Biden and Vice President Harris made repeated, deliberate decisions that raised government spending by 22% more than what it would have been under prior law. This increased inflation, which in turn exacerbated autopilot spending. You saw, by the way, Joe Biden come out yesterday and make his first speech. They allowed him to kind of come up out of the crypt and talk in front of people, which he looked honestly even worse than he did when he was running for president and then giving up that run. But his big speech was Social Security. He's still trying to warn people that Donald Trump is going to cut Social Security, which, again, I assure you, he has absolutely no desire to jump into that. He doesn't care. You have to be a complete nerd and care about that policy like it's the biggest thing in the world if you're going to try to touch it. We remember, like, it's like Radiohead. I really like early Radiohead. The later stuff got weird. That was kind of the stuff with Paul Ryan. Early Paul Ryan, there was some real good there. I mean, he was trying to modify these programs and actually give us a long track for success. Later on, it kind of got a little bit weaker and not my favorite stuff. But that early Paul Ryan, those proposals, he cared about those things. He cared about reinvigorating our entitlement system to make it palatable and affordable. And everyone basically rejected that. I mean, the Republicans ran away from it and now are so they can't even see it. They can't even see entitlement reform from where they're standing. But again, these aren't entitlements. The Inflation Reduction Act was not popular. You don't have to go back to some program that's been around for 50 years and has become popular on both sides of the aisle and trying to screw with that. People, honestly, understandably, have their hesitations doing that for political reasons. But we're talking about the crap that Biden just did. A lot of this money hasn't even been spent yet. Some of these programs, 75% of the money hasn't been spent yet. We can just stop it. And that will count as a savings in this reconciliation process, which is really important. Soaring interest costs, expanded welfare programs, and student debt transfers were the main contributors to the four-year spending splurge. Let me give you some of the charts. We got Chartapalooza here for you from Epic. Here we go. Outlays. Look at the outlays here. Up to one. I mean, this is absolutely incredible how the increases here. from 1,058 to 1,223 to 970, a slight decrease that 1 year, to 1,494 when it comes to outlays. By the way, of course, I shouldn't have to explain this to you, but this is in billions of dollars. These are big, big, big freaking numbers. The per household impact of the Biden-Harris agenda. Outlays, $36,100 per household, $17,100 of revenues, which again, government revenues can be a positive in that if you keep the rates the same and you see more income coming to the government, that means your economy is growing. And that's a good, it's not a good thing because more money to the government isn't a good thing, but it can be a good sign for the economy. The economy is growing. I don't praise an increase in income coming to the government, though. I'm not excited about that. We see it all the time when you cut taxes, and conservatives oftentimes will say, well, we've cut taxes and now revenue has gone up. The Democrats will say, well, not compared to what we projected before with the higher rates. And we say, yeah, but it's still more money than you had last time. That's going up. However, I don't love that. I would love it to not be. Honestly, I would love to have a budget that actually makes sense, spend money on the things that we actually need, not go overboard. And then if we get more revenue in from taxpayers than we need in that budget, we refund it. We pay down our debt, something. Per household agenda, by the way, $29,700 when it comes to debt. When it comes to take-home pay, look what happened during the Biden administration. You do see a bounce back toward the end of the term slightly, but only about half of the decrease that happened in the first half of the term has been recovered. And we're still behind where we should be there. Projections were made back in the day. This is before Biden and Harris on inflation and what the levels would be. And you see the blue bar here, walking this through for podcast listeners only. You see about a 7% rise to today from where it should have been at the beginning of the Biden administration. The actual reality, of course, is much closer to 20% inflation over that period. And interest rates are higher than projected as well by a massive amount. And we don't seem to be really going in the right direction on that as well. And you think, well, okay, we're talking about I think the total is something like $5 trillion. Some of that money has been spent. You're not going to be able to claw it back. You can't just stop it. It's not a Doge type of thing where Doge can just come in and say, okay, well, we're getting rid of that spending because this is congressionally authorized. You have to kind of go through that process and spend the money. However, a law can do this. This reconciliation bill can cut this actual spending. So the money that was promised to stupid things, you know, climate agendas, some very small percentage, there's $7.5 billion, I believe is the number, that is going toward charging stations, for example. Very small percentage of that money has actually been spent. We have almost nothing to show for what has been spent. Just cut that off, right? Stop that right away. Stop doing that. Those types of things can be written into this bill and can actually make a difference. And it's not just the $5 trillion that was spent in all of these, you know, Inflation Reduction Act and the American Workers Plan or whatever other socialist name they came up with it. It's also the executive actions. From the House Budget Committee, they came up with President Biden's executive actions, have cost taxpayers over $2 trillion. The ending the Medicaid work requirements, $3 billion. The thrifty food plan overhaul, $300 billion. Government contractor rules, $3 billion. New public charge rule, $26 billion. Illegal Obamacare expansion, $34 billion. Student loan repayment pause, $165 billion. The so-called SAVE plan, $260 billion. Medicare eligibility rules, $200 billion. New student loan bailouts, $150 billion. Nursing home minimum staffing rules, $17 billion. New multi-pollutant emission standards for light and medium duty vehicles, which is just the sexiest name possible, $224 billion. The hardship student loan proposal, another $350 billion. The ending the Trump-era SNAP work requirements, $11 billion. And the additional net interest payments, $300 billion. The interest one is another big thing. We're talking about a number that is bigger than our Defense Department at this point, and it's only rising in the future. We need to get this under control. I know no one cares about it anymore. I know no one cares about spending. I know the Republicans have sort of moved on. Conservatives don't seem to care about this anymore. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, well, I care still. And frankly, with the amount of charts I show in the show, you probably care too, because you wouldn't watch the show if you didn't. I don't know. I feel like we do have to do this. And this is something that is absolutely achievable by this Congress. If they actually are ballsy enough to stand up and say, hey, yeah, I know Joe Biden started this new entitlement program, you know, a year ago, and you're all going to say how much you depend on it. And we'll get the stories with the moms who come out and say, I was getting this money and now I'm not, and I'm very upset about it. I know that's all going to happen. Do you have any principles at all? Did you actually run against Joe Biden because you thought he did a bad job, or just because you wanted a different letter behind the president's name? Which one was it? Because you can fix a lot of the stuff that he was doing. He passed a lot of it late. He didn't. It's not all out the door yet. We can still stop a lot of it, and we should. Stepping up to make the economy better is something that Republicans should stand on. And we're seeing, because of tariffs and new taxes on goods coming in from overseas, we're seeing a real drop off on independents. This is a terrifying stat that Donald Trump was a plus one or two on the economy among independents coming in January. He's now minus 29. That is a massive drop that there's very few historical precedents for in a very short period of time. The tariffs are doing what they're doing. Donald Trump loves them. You know I don't agree with him on that particular thing. But if you want to turn around the problems that go along with those tariffs, if you're going to keep them in, the way to do that is to excite the economy with incentives, too. Let's give some of the sugar, some of the carrot instead of just the stick. We'll talk about, by the way, some of this trade stuff coming up with Glenn. He's got a big show on that tonight, and what is wrong with the proposals that have gone through the last period of, you know, what the people might call the free trade era, and how that works with Donald Trump's new approach. We'll get into that next. Let me ask you something. Have you ever gone through a big life change and thought, you know, I just need a person who actually knows what they're doing, someone who actually gets this? Buying or selling a home is one of those moments. It's not just paperwork. It's not just moving boxes. It's a full emotional roller coaster with your financial future riding shotgun. And that is why you need someone in your corner, someone who knows what they're doing, not some app, not some algorithm, not just someone with a license and a headshot. You want a pro, someone who has seen it all, someone who knows the market and knows how to close deals. Someone will pick up the phone, honestly, and talk you through the best options and help you make the right call. That's what realestateagentsitrust.com does every day. They connect you with the top agents in your area. These are experienced professionals who've been vetted, who have the track record to prove it, the kind of people who treat your home like it's their own. If you are thinking about buying or selling a home, do not do it alone. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com, realestateagentsitrust.com. A free service to you, by the way. It's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
I'm joined once again by Glenn Beck. He has a brand new special coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. Quibble with this title a little bit. How Free Trade Destroyed American Jobs. That's the title of the show. Be sure to stay tuned. Glenn, I mean, titles are titles.
Titles are titles, and I didn't title it, and I don't agree with that title either.
It's a little too strong. I feel like it's stronger than your nuanced full view of the situation.
Yeah,
is that accurate? It's a title, though. That happens.
For free trade, full stop, okay? I am also for doing what's right for countries. For instance, we structured the world after World War II in favor of Europe because we were the only ones that wasn't destroyed.
Yeah.
And we felt it was important that our allies could rebuild, okay? So we made things favorable, for instance, for the auto industry in Germany and Japan. It's about 100% tariff when all is said and done. If you try to buy an American car over in Europe, you'll pay about 100% more in Europe, okay?
Way too high.
Way too high. Do you know how much Europeans have to pay for a tariff on a Japanese car?
No.
Zero.
Mm.
Zero. That's a
inequity there.
Yeah, that's a World War II thing.
So it was put into place in theory to help Japan come back.
And we did the same with Germany. Mm-hmm. Okay, we wanted to rebuild these the countries because they have to have infrastructure, they have to have jobs, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure,
you know it's good for peace and everything else. Now, is that still valid today? I don't think so. And are we now in a situation to where we need to be rebuilt? You know, so should the tariffs, is it time for us to go, you know what? We play with these tariffs here and there to help countries. I don't agree with it, but there are times after war you go, you know what, let's help them rebuild. Is it time for us to say, you know what, gang, we need to do what's absolutely right for us and us alone because we need to rebuild? And I think you can make a strong case for that. Whether tariffs are the way to go, I've told the president, you know this.
Yes.
We had a half hour phone call just on tariffs, and it was like, I don't agree with you, Mr. President.
And he was fine with that.
And he was totally fine with
it. But he was like, this is what I believe.
This is what I believe.
And I'm the president.
And he's been saying that since 1980. Mm-hmm. So nobody should be surprised that he's doing this. Maybe the speed and the scope of it.
The scale of the tariffs in Trump 2.0 have surprised me a little bit, although he has backed off on many of them.
Right, which is another thing you have to understand with Donald Trump. I think it was Besant that said over the weekend, he was asked by Bloomberg, you know, are you doing X, Y, and Z? And he said, well, you know what I'm not doing? I'm not revealing our strategy on global television. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you don't know exactly what he's doing, what is negotiation, what's not.
Sure.
But the one thing Donald Trump is doing is, one, I know for sure, he is trying to get the world to think differently than it has since the end of World War II. Mm-hmm. He is trying to shake up everything and saying, the world doesn't work this way anymore.
Right.
And so you have to think differently. He's very good at the Overton window, moving things so dramatically that when you get to a 20% tariff, you're like,
whew. No, I mean, that's what's happened, right? Like, right. I think, imagine if we had a debate that started and ended with a 20% tariff on your electronics, Apple electronics and laptops and everything coming from China. That would have been a big story.
Huge.
And instead, it feels like relief.
And maybe you'd get to 8.
Right.
Okay, he wanted 20%. We're just making this up. Sure. I don't know. But if he wanted 20%, go to 200. And then when you reduce it to 20, everybody's like, well, we dodged that bullet.
Yeah.
That's how he negotiates.
That's very true. I think that part of it is, I think you're right. And those two things that you can actually take, I agree that's what he's trying to do.
Right.
It is confusing, I think, for the average person to understand all this because of the fact that we get 5, 6, 7 different justifications from different cabinet members. They you know, some people are saying, oh, no, it's just a strategy.
You know what?
Sometimes they're saying, no, they're going to stay here forever. They're all over the board.
When you are negotiating, do you really want people to know? You have to be able to retreat. You have to give them a place to retreat to.
Yep. No, that's
so good. They feel like they've won. And you have to have a place to retreat to.
Yes.
You feel you've won.
Right. You want both sides to win. You stalked me that from the beginning. A negotiation isn't like, I screwed you over, I win. It's you want both sides to leave believing they got something out of it and believing that's a win. That's how you get the next negotiation.
Correct. Now that's how you remain friends and in business with each other. Otherwise, it's just who's going to screw who.
Now, that's your policy. I don't know that I've always noticed that from Donald Trump, that both sides win. I think a lot of times he likes to say that he won that negotiation. But that being said, all of this comes down to, I guess, an overall view of how you do these things, right? Like you mentioned rebuilding Japan. And one of the ways you do that is by putting 0% tariffs on cars going into Europe, right? Well, if we need to rebuild, that would indicate potentially that we would want 0% tariffs, right? We would want to take taxes and barriers away because that's just money going to the government that could be spent on other things in our economy.
He wants to rebuild. I think he wants zero. He'd love zero tariffs on ours and high tariffs.
That's what he
on theirs.
Right.
That's what we did with Japan. Mm-hmm. High tariffs for stuff coming to them from us, and no tariffs for them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he's saying it's time to rebuild America, which I think is true. I just don't know if this is the most effective way to do it.
Yeah.
But I know a couple of things. One, what we have been doing is not working. Two, free trade is not truly free trade. If everybody had a 20% tariff, that's free trade. As free as you can. You know what I mean?
It's fair.
Relatively.
It's fair trade.
Yes. It's relative free trade. Okay, it's fair, but it's relative free trade. Mm-hmm. If it was all reciprocal, that's not free trade, but it's relative free trade.
And I think like the term free trade gets utilized a lot. It doesn't. It's a goal. Yes. We've never been in a situation in our entire lives where we had free trade. It's something you push. It's like saying capitalism. Like capitalism has all sorts of elements of other systems involved in it.
Correct.
But we're trying, like as conservatives, we're trying to move towards capitalism. And I think, at least until recently, we were trying to move toward free trade. And you could say that balance gets off at times, I suppose. But like, I think.
But what is your goal? And the goal I know for Donald Trump is to make sure that we can be self-sufficient. So here's the other thing that he's trying to do. One, he's trying to get rid of the all the whole system, the entire system set up after World War II. We set it up with Bretton Woods and everything else, and it was in our favor, but we were also helping Japan and Europe and the rest of the world. Then after that, we got greedy here in America. We wanted war and the Great Society. So we had the let's fight communism all over the world, and it's going to cost us a fortune that we can't afford. And we want the Great Society, which is going to cost us a fortune that we can't afford. And there's only so much gold on Earth. Mm-hmm. You can't have both. So we got rid of the gold standard. Now, this caused real panic because Bretton Woods, right after World War II, we promised the world we will never devalue our cash. We'll never devalue the dollar. It's as good as gold. You can take our dollar, bring it to the treasury, and we will give you a dollar's worth of gold. Okay, that's what we promised the world. So use our dollar as the gold standard. You don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. 72, we violate that. And we say, yeah, well, we want more stuff. And so we're going to go off the gold standard. Well, the world freaked out because they're like, wait a minute, if you devalue your dollar, you're taking money out of our savings account because you told us a dollar is worth a dollar's worth of gold. Now that won't be true anymore. And so we made a couple of deals. We made a deal with Saudi Arabia. We became the petrodollar, not the gold dollar, the petrodollar. Okay? It was the only way you could buy oil from the Arab world was through us, through having our dollars. Mm-hmm. So you had to have our dollars. Now instead of, no, it's totally fair and it's totally, now we have a gun. Well, if you want oil, you're going to have our, okay. So that didn't make the world happy. And we were also devaluing. And so we had to make another agreement. And what we told the rest of the world was, look, we've made refrigerators and televisions. We've done all of these things. You all own our cars, our airplanes, our washers and dryers, and we've become wealthy. We have all of this money. We now want to buy your products. And so to calm the rest of the world down, we said, we're now going to be the biggest buyer the world has ever seen. We'll be the consumer of the world. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is we stopped making things and we started becoming a consumer nation, which made the rest of the world happy because now they could get rich. Now they could have industry. But by doing that over the last 50, 60 years, we now have nothing but debt and we're not producing the things. It's not bad to have stuff produced overseas at all, mm-hmm. but we are making critical errors of not being able to make our own food, we have all this farmland, not being able to make our own medicine, not getting our own rare earth minerals, not being able to make essential stuff, especially when we saw what happened in COVID. You break down the supply line, countries crumble. As a global superpower, it's in our national interest, security, to be able to make the critical things that any nation would need. And I think every country should be doing that. Doesn't mean we stop global trade or anything else, but you should be able to be self-reliant, okay?
At least on key things.
On key things, right. On key things. Not everything, mm-hmm. key things. And so he's trying to do that at the same time. So he's trying to stop making us just the world's consumer, which has hurt us in many ways, especially moving forward. It's critical. The second thing is he's trying to break up the social order from 1946. Those two things are huge. And so he's got to come in, honestly, looking like a madman with the Overton window and say, I'm crazy and everything must go. So when you get it and you moderate it, the world goes, okay, all right, we won, we won, we won. And we can say, we won.
Mm. I mean, as you always say, it's going to be very interesting to watch that all play out.
We talked about it on the radio today. This is the highest risk game I have ever seen us play.
Let me push back on one thing that we talk about a lot here, and I'm going to be fascinated to see your show tonight because you're going to go into a lot of this stuff. But like, I think we get stuck a lot of times in without asking the question as compared to what, right? Like we say that this isn't working, right? As compared to what? I mean, look at around the world. A lot of them have implemented tariffs over this time. A lot of them have done that. Mm-hmm. Would we trade places with any of them? No. I mean, I'm not saying what we have is perfect. It's definitely not. However, I'm afraid we're going to be chasing this like grass is greener on the other side place that doesn't actually exist.
So if anybody thinks that we're going to be making steel again in giant factories, you're fooling yourself. Mm. We're not, I mean, do you want to go back to working on the assembly line?
I don't.
No, I don't. And I don't think most Americans want to either, but we do want to be able to produce our own things. We have to lead in tech. We have to have rare earth minerals. We have to have small steel plants strategically placed around the country where the need is. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We don't need to make all of the steel, but we need to be able to make some of the important steel that we need. So I think it's important for us to retool on a couple of things. We have got to stop being the world's consumer. Now, that means the United States government itself has got to stop spending, okay? We have to stop spending. We want to be more balanced as people, and I don't want the government involved in any of this, but as people, you know, Bernays, the father of advertising, actually the father of propaganda that later became called advertising here in America, he said back in the, 1910s, he said, you know, the problem with America is it's a nation of needs, and we need to turn it into a nation of wants. Well, we did. Now we get what we want, and we think we need mm-hmm. what we want.
Yeah.
Okay. That has to change as well. So there's these fundamental things that have been going on in America for a very long time, both internally and externally, that have to change. Donald Trump is the first one to actually address most of those issues by telling us the truth on many things, like we won't survive if we keep doing the same things. We won't survive if we continue. These wars are caused by us, even with the best intentions. They're caused by us saying, oh, we're going to deliver democracy to you. Stop it. It doesn't work. The CIA and the intelligence industrial complex, that's deadly to us. It's got to stop. Stop with all of the secrets. Stop with trying to control the rest of the world. Let's turn internal here for just a second, not isolationist, but let's turn in and say, what are the things we as a people, as a society, as a country need to fix so we can move forward in a new chapter of America?
And I think, you know, there's definitely things strategically we can improve, like whatever low level manufacturing, trying to move that from an adversary in China, right, to maybe a friend in India or something, another country might be helpful. It's just, I guess, where this all lands, right? This is the puzzle he's trying to put together right now.
And, you know, he hasn't made any friends through this, which is kind of we wouldn't have done what we did with Canada. Yeah. But we do need friends. We do need allies. We need to work together to move this forward, to save the West, because he's not just saving America. If he succeeds, it will be saving the West, because Europe, the people of Europe will see and go, that, just like we look down at, in Argentina and we go, I want some of that. We're such a huge example that if we're successful, we'll save the rest of the West. Mm. If he fails, you know, we're just in a different world.
There's a lot on Donald Trump's plate, and Glenn's going to go through all of that tonight.
And I'm talking to him next week, next Wednesday.
That's right.
I will be in the Roosevelt Room with him.
In D.C.
In D.C.
Oh, wow. So big interview coming up with Glenn. A lot of these questions maybe going to be part of it.
Oh, yeah.
9 p.m. Eastern tonight is his show. How Free Trade Destroyed American Jobs is the title that Glenn doesn't like. That's coming up. As always, the best way to watch is on Blaze TV or go to StuDoesAmerica.com. Enter the code STU. You'll save $20 off your subscription. Glenn, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mild würzig, je 150 Gramm Packung, nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken, mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
I was talking to Glenn about the tariff rates on all these goods. And this chart I found online, which is kind of a fascinating breakdown of all the different ones. Now they're saying the top rate is 245% on Chinese goods for syringes and needles. The second highest is lithium ion batteries for 173%. And then squid for 170%. Is there a big squid controversy I didn't know about? You see the whole thing break down 148% for electric cars. Laptops, 20%. I mentioned that, like, even if it was just a laptop, imagine if your iPhones and your laptops go up by 20%, which is usually about what happens when tariffs get put on over some time. That would be a big story just in and of itself. Finally, children's books are 0%. And kids are just like, wait, the one thing I don't like, you didn't put any tariffs on? So anyway, that's what we got. Books. I would like to see what the lobbying procedure is for people like, well, this book is actually aimed at kids. Okay, it's an economic history book. It's kids' economic history. They can get regular books apparently have a tariff. Kids' books don't. Who knows? Okay, Harvard, by the way, one of the big reasons I don't like the Trump tariff stuff is because I think it's going to distract from the good things that he's doing. The Harvard thing, I think, is pretty interesting. We do not owe Harvard any money. They do not need our money. They should not get one dime from us. Full stop. Honestly, whether they're doing DEI or not, they have a $53 billion endowment. They shouldn't get a dime from us. But the spin now from Harvard is basically like, this actually is going to hurt Harvard. Even though they have $53.2 billion in endowments, they won't save it from Donald Trump, says Axios. They're saying they won't surrender their independence. But one of the big things is a lot of the money comes in. That is about 16% of their operating revenue does come in from the actual government. Their endowment, though, a lot of the distributions are like targeted for specific things. So like if a bunch of it's going to their swim team or whatever, they can't use that for other things that they need. So it's not going to be as easy as just plugging the numbers in. Frankly, I'm not worried about Harvard's future. I'm worried about what they'll do to our future by the people that graduate from there, but that's a whole different story. Josh Shapiro, we talked about this a little bit, that he was targeted by an arsonist, and we were kind of speculating on who it would be, because that's what you do. And a lot of people were like, well, a Democrat, a Republican, some right-winger. Yeah, apparently not. We are now seeing suspected arsonist targeted Pennsylvania Josh Shapiro over Palestine. What a surprise. It's a shocking development. Gee, the same people that are lighting campuses on fire all over the place also are going after the Jewish governor of Pennsylvania with fire as well. So that's where we are right now. That's where we stand. We'll see if there's more developments on that, but that does seem to be where that story ends. And you won't hear about it anymore because it wasn't a right-wing figure. If it was, it would be the biggest story in the world. But since it's not, goodbye news. We loved you while you were here, but sayonara. Probably seen what's going on. The media, it's not just bias. They're actively shaping a version of reality that kind of leaves out the truth entirely. This is exactly why Blaze Media launched Frontier. It's a magazine, and issue number 2 is coming out. It is stronger than even the first, I think. We're talking about real investigative reporting, exclusive interviews, and fearless takes you will not find anywhere else. This is not content for clicks. I mean, it's a magazine. It's not content for clicks. It's journalism for people who are tired of being lied to. And you cannot just buy Frontier on newsstands. You can't go get it on Amazon. The only way to get it is through Blaze Unlimited. With Blaze Unlimited, you get Frontier plus exclusive shows, early event access, members-only content, and priority support. And if you sign up now, you'll also get full digital versions of issue number one, which is really cool. You can kind of catch up on the whole thing. So go to blazeunlimited.com/stew. Get the magazine, get the full experience. It's our highest level subscription here at The Blaze. And you can stay connected to these stories the media does not want you to hear. It's blazeunlimited.com/stew, blazeunlimited.com/stew. Join us today. It's an important time to get involved in something, and we think you'll really enjoy Blaze Unlimited. Check it out.